We interrupt to take you live to Dove Valley for this Broncos press conference.
New situation for me, so getting my feet wet was a good process. Even going out for the walkthrough this morning and just kind of going in the huddle and calling a play for the first time was, you know, it was new, so it was good to get that over with.
And now an update from Glenwood's.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far, man. I think we're up there grinding away. He's kind of given us the basic philosophy of the offense and, you know, where we can take this thing. So I've had a lot of fun with it, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun the rest of the season and off season too.
You got a young core of receivers, looks like. Right? What do you think of them so far?
I'm excited about them, man. I just think personality-wise, you can tell they're a hardworking group. They're not very selfish. They go out there and they work hard. And I think when you have that as a good foundation, you can tell you can go a long way with it.
Probably easier now that the football has sort of started. Is there a little bit of a new kid in school?
Yeah, it's funny, man. I figured it would take a week or so before it wasn't so awkward finding a seat in the cafeteria and things like that, you know, that you kind of take for granted being so easy. But all of a sudden you're the new guy and you got to just sit down with somebody and dive right in. But there's an aspect of it that's kind of fun. I mean, it's not like I'm a young guy and going through that, you know. So it is a little bit different than back when you were a rookie, but it's still something to get used to. And I think you have to dive right in and make yourself as comfortable as possible. So I'm still getting there, but you can tell the guys are great, and they've been great the whole time.
Have you been more of an extrovert than maybe you would have been in Baltimore? Have you just trying to meet people?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a little bit older. I'm probably a little bit more comfortable just talking to guys. I think I'm the oldest guy on the team, or I'm at least close to it. So if I'm not comfortable to talk to a couple kids, you know, if I'm not comfortable talking to a couple kids, then, you know, what am I going to do?
Is your family out here yet?
No, not yet. They're finishing school back in Jersey. They'll be out here probably when we come out for training camp. They'll probably come out here. So
has that made the adjustment a little easier for you to just be like all football? All
football? Oh, yeah. That's what I typically do on the off seasons, man. I come out here. I'm on easy street. My wife's at home with five kids, and I'm just playing football for a few hours a day. I tell you what. It is. It does give me a chance to, you know, to build a relationship with guys, go out to dinner with them, you know, go out on the golf course. I think those are the things that you take for granted, but you know, back when you were in college and that's all you had to do, it was easy to build team camaraderie because you were able to do that all the time. So the fact that I can do that at this time of the year, I think is really important.
In the past couple of weeks, have you noticed your conditioning has changed at all because of the altitude, and have you had to adjust?
I haven't noticed too much. I dry out real quick. I think the first time we ran like some 30-yard striders in the indoor, it was a really easy run, no offense to Coach Lando, but I was definitely probably a little bit more winded than, you know, I would expect myself to be at sea level. But other than that, it hasn't been an issue. I'm a quarterback. It's not like I'm out there killing myself running around so much. So.
The ball traveling farther though?
I don't know. We haven't let go. Vic's got us on the 40-yard line, so we're not killing anybody's legs and stuff like that. But I anticipate the ball probably travels a little further, yeah.
Have you hit any golf balls?
I haven't, but I assume I'm going to go back down to sea level and have to kind of club up a couple clubs and be pissed at myself for it.
If this team drafts a quarterback next week, what did you gain last year from that experience that can be applied with a young guy around you?
I don't know. I think I had a pretty good outlook on it last year, and it is what it is. I want to get this team to be the best it is with me at the quarterback position. So obviously that's not the most of most importance to draft a quarterback. But if we do, that's completely out of my control. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to compete, and he's going to have to come out here and be on the field with me every day too. So, you know, I'm all ready for that.
Would it be better if they don't take one at 10? Better if they take one in the second, fifth round?
Oh, well, yeah, like I said, I don't really care about whether they take a quarterback or not, whether it's 10 or whatnot. The only thing I care about is, like I said, I want this team to be as good as they can with me at quarterback. So if we feel like as a team, as an organization, we can add value to our team with a 10th pick, well, then I'm all for getting a guy that can add value to the team with me as the understood quarterback. But, it is what it is, man.
As a veteran, Joe, what do you do during the draft? Are you dialed in? You got a wish list for Elway? Like, hey, I could use a tight end or something?
I'm honestly probably going to be on a flight back to Philadelphia during that Thursday night. I think I land at like 10:30 or so. So I really don't pay too much attention to the draft. You never know who's going to trade up, who's going to get picked where, and how things are going to kind of fall into place. So, I'm just kind of a fan at that point.
What can you accomplish at this time of year as a quarterback and a leader Is it, you know, is it changing the culture? Is it discipline? What do you look, because it's not like you're getting graded or evaluated. What do you try to do as a clear leader of a team at this point in the offseason?
Well, first of all, I think you are getting graded and evaluated. I think we always are. In this league, you're always getting evaluated, man. I mean, they're looking at everybody, and guys are trying to make the team. I think when you're new, obviously, this is a little different offseason. I'm a new guy, so a lot can be accomplished. I mean, besides football, I mean, obviously, you can go out there, and you're going to develop your team and really gain the confidence to carry you into what you believe you're going to be that season. I think that an offseason can do a ton for that. But as a new quarterback, you know, who's just naturally a leader on the team, you know, it's my job. The first thing I want to do is prove to everybody on this football team, the guys that play on this field, that I can play and I can be their quarterback. You know, because then, you know, anything is possible. If they really believe that I'm the guy, I believe I'm the guy. If they start to believe that I'm the guy, well, that's when your leadership can take off and the team can really take off.
That's only through showing, right?
Yeah, you got to do it. I said, no, it's all about going out there and performing.
You mentioned that this is fun. Being on a new team, a new environment, is that the exciting part for you?
Well, yeah, that's definitely, it is exciting. It makes it, I mean, it just adds a little something to it that isn't there. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's any more exciting or any, you know, than the past has been. It's just a little bit different. It's a different type of excitement. It's a different, it's just fresh. It's, and even beyond me being new, just like we talked about the core group of our guys being young. That's an exciting thing to get to work with young guys and help them become the players that they believe that they are.
At what point do you think you'll be able to get a sense of what this defense can be just from going against them?
It's tough right now because we're just, you know, you're in helmets. But I think you can already get a sense for how quickly they're going to fly around. I think Vic's definitely going to bring, you know, the culture he's going to bring with how hard we practice and how we fly around to the ball and how everybody's, you know, rallying to it on both sides of the ball. I think you're going to be able to pretty quickly get a sense for how good they can be and why he's such a good coach.
You talk about kind of proving to the people out here that you're the guy. Is there a sense as a quarterback where you could start to feel it, you know, okay, I'm practicing really well or whatever, where you could start to feel the guys start to gravitate to you?
Yeah, you look at their eyes after you throw a pass and maybe a pass that they didn't expect that they didn't expect to get, but it got in there, things like that. You know, as far as proving it to the offensive linemen, sometimes you got to go out there and takes game reps for that. You know, it takes getting hit and showing those guys what you're made of and things like that for those guys to really start to believe and take it to the next level at least. So there's a lot of things that go into that. And, you know, I just got to keep my head down and play football and those things will happen.
With the amount of experience you bring to this roster, what can a young coaching staff do to elevate your game? Is there certain ways that fresh new thinking can sort of help advance your play, you think?
Oh, there's no doubt. I think coaches are, you know, they're underrated a lot of times. And, you know, obviously it's up to the players come game day, but, you know, coaches at this level do have a really important role. I mean, you know, everybody that takes the field on a Sunday has a talented team. And sometimes the coaches can make the difference. And listen, there's not too many different schemes on offense or defense that you can run, but there is little different teaching and coaching points and different ways to get things across to players that might work better or not. And, I'm excited about being with a new group and getting going on that.
How similar is this to what Gary ran with you in 2014? How different is it?
Well, I think terminology-wise, I'm familiar with a lot. You know, I really am. That's kind of made the transition easy. I think the play pass stuff, there's a lot of stuff that's familiar with that. The keepers, I think some of the drop-back games are a little different. But overall, I would say there's a pretty good amount of familiarity with it.
When you get traded, you take it personally. I mean, how can you not? But guys are talking about the edge they've seen for you. Now you're in the grind of it. You still feel that edge of, like, you know, I want to show people at this point?
I think I've said it before. There's always little things, I think, every year that motivate you, you know, beyond the things that just naturally motivate you, which is, you know, usually for guys wanting to be the best and win football games. Listen, when I'm out in that field, it's just about playing football and doing my job within the 11 guys on the team. So it's tough to let that outside stuff kind of come in and let you focus. But it's the way you carry yourself on the field. It's the way you run from drill to drill. It's the way that you go in the weight room and you work hard. And when you're running sprints, you work hard. You get in the huddle and you lead the huddle the way you're supposed to. And I think some of that stuff, you know, the edge that you bring, you know, it's important. I think it carries you through some of that stuff.
Joe, what do you remember from your own draft night and draft experience?
I remember not wanting any cameras in my house, but eventually folding and having somebody come to my house. And, you know, I didn't know when I was going to be picked. I could have been a third-round pick, and I could have been a first-round pick. And it was a pretty good day for me. It's an exciting time, man, to become an NFL player, or at least have a chance to be an NFL player. It's a pretty special moment. You can't take for granted how much hard work it takes to get to this league and get to where these guys are about to get to. So it'll be a lot of fun for guys, I think.
Thank you very much, Joe.
All right.
Thanks, Joe. Hi, there is Joe Flacco. A lot of interesting stuff there, especially when everything was light and having fun about hitting golf balls, and Cristal's doing his typical really deep analysis of things, and then the Denver Post comes across with a left uppercut and says, well, what if they draft a quarterback? And that's a good question. And we'll talk about that coming up next.
It's Football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, well, that was kind of cool, Joe Flacco. It's D-Mac with 104.3TheFan.com's James Marilat. James is our new digital media director. Get that right? Is there another title I should be...
Editor. That's the editor. Term that's been thrown around, but whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
Dude in charge of the digital media side of things, and it's awesome to have James with me here today. Joe Flacco. That's more or less Joe Flacco right there that we heard. That's his personality. That's his nature. That's Joe Flacco.
I think I came away from it more impressed than maybe it sounds like you were. And I think...
Not necessarily. What impressed you?
Well, I just thought he showed a little bit of personality. I thought he showed a little bit of passion. I thought he gave some unscripted answers where he didn't sound like he'd been rehearsing them with Patrick in the background for 2 hours, and that's why it started late.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Smythe, the guru over there.
Yeah, which, is, again, I'm not knocking that. That's good. They probably should have done that with past QBs. But it came across like, hey, I have a thought in my head that if you ask me something that I'm not expecting, I can answer it. But I'm gonna pump the brakes a little bit. It's a little analogous to, we've been eating prison food for 3 years. We don't have to go to Shanahan's for it to seem great.
That's funny.
But I was impressed. I thought there were some things in there that were like, oh, okay, well, I thought this will be interesting every week.
You know, one of the things in this whole process to me, you got 3 kids. I got 2 kids. I think any of us out there with kids and wives and have changed jobs or had to move understand what a big deal it is. It is not something that you do lightly. It can absolutely impact your decisions on what you do and how you do it. So I was always really, really curious, would Joe Flacco actually move out here with his family? Because when I found out he has 5 kids, all under the age of 6, and none of them are twins. Hey, do you have kids? I mean, do you understand what that means? Do you get it? And I don't care if you're the richest person in the world and you have nannies out the yin-yang. You have got to be present. If you're not present, I don't know how your relationship is going to go with your significant other. So I was always fascinated in this process because it would have been kind of easy, James, had he just been picked up by the Washington Redskins. Had he been picked up by the Washington Redskins, he may not have had to move at all. He may have been able to just commute because the Redskins facility is on the eastern side of D.C. and the Ravens facility is all kind of right there. It's pretty reasonable he may have a 30 to 40 minute commute either way. If that was the case, wouldn't that have been ideal?
It could have been the Joe Biden of the NFL commuting from Delaware.
Possibly. Philip Rivers commutes 3 hours a day. Had a specially built vehicle because he's got 8, I think, working on 9 kids. And he didn't want to move the family. The reason to me this is important is because commitment to me is a big deal for a guy who is, as he pointed out, he is the oldest guy on the team. I went through it like, I said, oh, are you, where are you? There's only a couple of 30-year-olds on this team, James. Emmanuel Sanders is 32. Kareem Jackson Chris Harris's best friend is 31. Von Miller's 30. We know because he got a Lambo.
Sure.
Of course. I mean, you get a Lambo on.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
Just for the big birthdays.
I'm turning 50 in June. I'm looking forward to getting my Yaris car washed. So.
It's all relative, D-Mac.
That's right. That's right. So. Joe is out here by himself. The kids and the wife are staying at home.
Well, they're not going to stay at home permanently.
We'll see.
Yeah, no, you're right.
We'll see.
Because when he answered the question.
We'll see, pal. These kids aren't in school.
Well, he said, we want to finish up the school year, stuff like that.
There's no school year for 5 kids under the age of 6. Dude.
And when I first heard it, that I was like, that makes sense. Okay,
yeah.
I get that. I've got kids, you know, that are in elementary school. It'd be hard to move them. Then you point out their ages. And I'm going to call Balderdash and say, well, it's pretty easy to move a kindergartner.
Yeah.
What are they going to miss?
Playing
with blocks?
Because guess what? And it was a good question asked later about if they draft a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Joe Flacco and they draft a quarterback at 10, I'm not moving my family out here. Why would I do that? I will take my $18 million and I'll figure it out. But I'm not uprooting my family. 5 kids under the age of 6 to come all the way out here if you draft a quarterback at 10. Let's wait a second and see what really happens.
So he's making family decisions in 9 days, essentially. Next Thursday, that's when he's going to decide, is this a 3-year or more move, or is this a 1-year audition for my next gig?
Can I wrap myself out a little bit? So I had my glory days at KVPI. They fired me. And then the same company who fired me hired me. Interesting place, down in Colorado Springs. And it wasn't just Colorado. It couldn't possibly be like the cool part of Colorado Springs, which is up north, where the buildings are new. And I know, cool part of Colorado Springs is a... hey, you said it. It's relative, right?
I didn't say anything.
You were thinking. The cool part of Colorado Springs is a very relative term.
Yeah.
But just trust me. After
hip part of Ogallala.
Believe it or not, if you're on the beach, maybe that's a little cooler in Ogallala.
Okay. All right,
I'm telling
you.
There's a part. I've been there.
McConaughey can be that. Okay.
Yeah, and then it's the Redneck Riviera there at Lake McConaughey. Uh-huh. As you drive your F-350 right to the edge of the water and just blow gas and smoke at everybody on the beach. I've been there for that too, my friends. But if I'm Joe, this is concerning, okay? Because how much this guy is going to be into this is, I think, going to have a massive impact on what kind of season the Broncos actually have.
I'm with you, but at this point, it's not on him in terms of commitment.
Let me wrap myself out just real quick. So I get fired, and I get hired down in Colorado Springs. It's not up north. It's down south circle. It's as far as you can go and still be in Colorado Springs. I worked there for 5.5 years, and I was asked repeatedly by the people that I worked with, well, are you going to move down? Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. We're just going to get school. James, I had no intentions. I mean, zero of ever moving to Colorado Springs. Zero. I'd go in there. I'd work. I'd do the best I could do, but I'm just ratting myself out. I was never, ever really committed to that because I always wanted to get back to Denver.
That was the stepping stone job.
It was the desperation job. It was I didn't have a whole heck of a lot of things going on, and I didn't want to uproot my family, and I wanted my kids to finish school and not have to move, and I just was, I'll just take it on the chin. 5.5 years. And I just know emotionally and psychologically, this is terrible, I guess, to admit, but I was never committed all the way. I mean, not even close to the way I've been here at the Fan for the past decade. Not even close.
But that wasn't because you were waiting on a decision by management to make that commitment. It was because you knew deep down you didn't want to be there. I don't think Joe Flacco, by not bringing his family out here, is telling us deep down he doesn't want to be here. Now, we get to June, July, August.
We'll see.
If his family is still back east, well, then I think that we can connect those dots. But I'm with you. I think he's waiting nine days.
Yeah. Because did you notice in that press conference how his tone changed dramatically when they brought that up?
He turned into back into cliche mode.
Yeah.
He was very short with his answers. He had no personality in the answers. He just wanted to get through that question. But if I were in his shoes, I would be sitting there thinking the same thing. I'm not going to make a commitment to you until I've seen that you've made a commitment to me. Once I see that, then the ball is in Flacco's court. Then it's his turn to make the move. Right now, he's waiting to see you. Well, the Broncos have told me all the right things. They've got in front of the press and the fan base and said the right things. But is that really what they believe? Well, dude, actions are going to speak louder than words in 9 days.
If they don't do what you want, or not what you want, sorry, what you think the Broncos will do. And I want to dig into it. But if they do, Broncos do what you think they will do. If I'm Joe Flacco, I'm doing the best I can. Honey, stay there. We're not really all into this. And I can't even imagine a more predictable 7-9 season coming up than that. If we're truly all in, if we're not drafting a quarterback at 10, then it really is about going to the playoffs. I could be here for a while, that sort of thing. So I think it's very interesting that you have not taken a six-year-old out of first grade to stay with you here and make a move here permanently.
Yeah,
not yet.
But he's seen this firsthand, right? It's the old Yogi Berra deja vu all over again.
No doubt about it. So at 10, what do they really do? We'll dig into it next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, so we're C-Mac with 104.3thefan.com's James Merrillat. It's great to have you here today, James. Great to have you as part of the radio station. So I'm excited that you're here. And we just heard from Joe Flacco. Now, I'm going with the kid conspiracy theory here in terms of level of commitment. But I don't blame Joe Flacco. I mean, for not bringing the whole family out right now. I mean, he got – when was the trade done? In January? When was the Joe Flacco? February?
Yeah, I mean, it's been long enough that he's had time to get the moving trucks, to get the Mayflower moving trucks out there and go cross country.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's no doubt about it.
That's not the issue. See, but you've got this conspiracy theory because you're connecting it to the Mike McCoy situation, right? Where
that is
he
correct.
Didn't move his
Very
family
good.
Out here.
He did not.
And that was a sign to you that, hey, how committed is he? Or is this just, I'm going to do this because I got to stay in the business and I'm really looking for my next head coaching job.
And I was 1,000% correct on that. And I like Mike. And I had a good relationship with Mike. I'd like to think I still do. Things went sideways in all sorts of, that's a whole other kind of story. But, you know, I knew Mike enough to talk about kids and stuff. And I knew he had teenagers who were kind of the same age as me, as, you know, John Fox did too. So we would talk about that kind of stuff. So I said to him, you know, where's your daughter going? Oh, no, she's, you know, still back in San Diego. I was like, oh, okay, cool. But in my mind, I was like, ah, this is short time, really short time. And how did that manifest itself? Mike McCoy just took on the role of the head coach. And then, of course, I find out Vance Joseph, who, of course, should never have been hired, and, of course, should have immediately been fired once all the stuff up in Boulder came out. I mean, immediately. It would have been embarrassing, James. It would have been embarrassing. But whatever. You would have got over that moment, just like the Colts got over their embarrassment of Josh McDaniels to get Frank Reich. You would have found somebody else, and we would have avoided all the mess that we've had here for the past couple of years.
It was a bad hire from a football standpoint. It was a worse hire from a PR standpoint, or whatever you want, whatever category you want to put that in. I'm in 100% agreement with you on that.
Yeah, and then McCoy, who I actually like, but made no sense because he really is a head football coach, or he's nothing. That's really who Mike, and maybe he's nothing. And wherever Mike goes next, and I don't even know where he is right now, but Mike might have to go to a college program where he's coached him before and maybe build up that way if he really wants back in. But it was pretty rough. I mean, he gets fired from the Broncos and from the Cardinals as the offensive coordinator in back-to-back years. But I really do think it's because he really needs that head coaching thing. So I find out that McCoy Vance Joseph was like afraid to go talk to Mike McCoy. Vance Joseph was like bumping around asking, being really frustrated by McCoy without just directly going to McCoy.
Is that because McCoy was making it difficult for him to come talk to him? Not that that should matter necessarily. You're the head coach. You can go talk to anybody you want to in the building.
Theoretically.
But we've all worked with people of that fall into that category of, man, I'm going to go talk to that guy or that gal only when I have to, because it is miserable to walk into that office. It could have been a Mike McCoy problem, not necessarily a Vance Joseph problem.
It could have, but you know, Vance Joseph didn't handle it the right way either. He didn't know how to handle it.
You have a loftier thought of Mike McCoy than I do.
That's fine. And those that want to be critical of Mike McCoy, I mean, I get it.
He's also the one head coach in a two-year span that managed to lose to the Cleveland Browns.
Gotcha. It's not like he's bouncing back somewhere right away.
Right.
But there was a magical time where Mike McCoy and Adam Gase figured out how to get Tim Tebow to the playoffs. And perhaps we're just riding that particular wave more than anything. That being said, it wasn't working out offensively. It was one of the worst years in Broncos history. It was a disaster. Okay, then there was going to be Billy Musgrave, right? Like, that was going to be the magic pill.
Mm-hmm.
James, to me, go look at a guy's resume. 2 years here, 1 year here, 3 years here, 2 years here, back to there, over here. And that's a guy who's going to repeat that cycle.
Yeah.
And that is proven true as well.
A guy who, back in the day, also up and quit in Carolina. Just said, I've had enough. I don't want to coach football anymore. I'm done. I'm out. Okay, I guess it's the Dick Vermeil route, right? You hit your burnout stage and you're done. But it was when they announced that staff, and the spin we got out of Dove Valley and from the Dove Valley Minions was, oh, this is a dream team of coaches. And it's Billy Moose, because look what he did with Derek Carr. And it's like, well, if he had so much to do with Carr's development there, why on earth did they get rid of him? Why on earth were the Raiders showing him the door? What had McCoy done? What had Vance Joseph done? Like, it just, none of it made any sense to me. If you actually went and looked through the resumes of the guys they brought in, not to mention Joe Woods, a guy who had spent 2+ decades at the exact same level. What does that tell you? If you've been a DB coach for 20-some years, had never moved up to be a defensive coordinator, that tells you, you know what you are? You're a DB coach. That's what you are.
The process was fascinating over the past couple of years. So now you get to this moment of what do you do at 10, and you think they will take a quarterback. Now, this to me is kind of awesome in scope, because it actually makes sense. Because if you are not convinced your veteran quarterback, the oldest guy on the roster, is a long-term solution, of course you should take a quarterback as high as possible, as soon as possible, which makes what they did last year mind-blowing, that you had that much faith in Case Keenum and you actually had faith in Paxton Lynch. Now, you were quick to chase away first-round pick Shane Ray by drafting Bradley Chubb, but somehow, mystically, you didn't see that you had issues with another guy you should never have drafted in the first place, and Paxton Lynch. So, James, when you say they will draft Drew Lock, which other people have prognosticated as well, it makes sense. He possibly is the best available quarterback when you're in the right position to draft him, because you don't believe in a long-term tenure for Joe Flacco.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think he has a skill set. We saw in Paxton Lynch some of the skills that John Elway covets in a quarterback. And I think it's driven him crazy to watch Trevor Siemian and Case Keenum, guys that are dink and dunk type quarterbacks, mm-hmm. who can't make the throws, who can't make plays, who can't rise to the occasion on 3rd and 8 and find a way to move the chains. I think it drove him nuts. So I think Drew Lock is the guy, talent-wise and skill-wise, much like Paxton Lynch. He fell in love with Paxton Lynch's skill set, right? His measurables.
Yeah.
But the difference here is, with Paxton Lynch, they didn't have the luxury of having a good excuse to have him sit. He's sitting behind a 7th-round quarterback. He's sitting behind a guy
who's
bounced around from team to team to team, and he can't beat him out. if they hire, if they draft Locke and they bring him in here, and he sits behind Flacco all season long,
which is all right,
nobody's going to question it. Nobody's going to say, what's wrong with Drew Locke?
But he's got to start the next year, and you got to move on from Joe Flacco. If not, what are you doing? Because the mixed messages right now is this is a win-now mentality. Every move they've made in the offseason is about winning now. So if you do take Drew Locke, you are giving up on Devin White, Ed Oliver, TJ Hockenson, the ability to move back and perhaps pick up N'Keal Harry later in the draft, Dalton Risner, Garrett Bradbury, a starting center, DeAndre Baker, Greedy Williams, for a guy who's not going to play. So it does make sense, James. It does. But it, I just don't think it makes John Elway sense.
Okay, but if they'd have had Joe Flacco on this team last year, and he's the guy making the throw down the sideline against Houston, or he's the guy who has to make whatever conversion on third down late in the game in one of those handful of games that could have gone the other way, I think John Elway firmly believes this team with a different quarterback goes 10-6. That's what I think. But
then you get to the really tricky part. We get to the trickiest part of them all. So I love this. Today's a great day because we get to the trickiest part of it all, and I'll tell you what it is next.